By his will I create, Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself, in his eternal form, as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of all these three energies. Please repeat after me. By his will, I create, Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself, in his eternal form, as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The conception of one without a second is clearly confirmed here. The one is Lord Vasudev, and only by His different energies and expansions are different manifestations, both in the material and in the spiritual worlds, maintained. In the material world also, Lord Vasudev is everything, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.19. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Everything is Vasudev only. In the Vedic hymns, also the same Vasudev is held to be supreme. It is said in the Vedas, Vasudevat Parabrahma na channa artha asti tatvataha. In fact, there is no greater truth than Vasudev, and Lord Krishna affirms the same truth in the Bhagavad Gita, Matta Parataram Nanat. There is nothing above me, Lord Krishna. So, the conception of oneness, as overly stressed by the impersonalist, is also accepted in the personalist in the personality of the Lord. The difference is that the impersonalist denies personality in the ultimate issue, whereas the devotee gives more importance to the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam explains this truth in the verse under discussion. Lord Vasudev is one without a second, but because he is all-powerful, he can expand himself as well as display his omnipotencies. The Lord is described here as omnipotent by three energies, three Shakti Dhrik. His three energies are internal, marginal, and external. The external energy is also displayed in the three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Similarly, the internal potency is also displayed in three spiritual modes, Sambit, Sandhini, and Ladini. The marginal potency or the living entities is also spiritual, prakritiṁ viddhi me param. But the living entities are never equal to the Lord. The Lord is nirasto shammo otishayo. In other words, no one is greater than or equal to the Supreme Lord. So the living entities, including even such great personalities as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are all subordinate to the Lord. In the material world also, in his eternal form of Vishnu, he maintains and controls all the affairs of the demigods, including Brahma and Shiva. It's a very wonderful purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Just in the purport, Prabhupada is giving the sum total of the Vedic philosophy. Generally people think that the Vedic culture is a worshipper of many gods. But here it has been explained that concept is wrong, because although the Vedic system worships different demigods, but it actually worships only one supreme personality of Godhead. Generally, due to lack of understanding or due to ignorance, people do not know who God is, and they do not know what's the difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the demigods. Regarding that, the Vedas have very clearly explained that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one and without a second. Advai, ekam eva adityam. Ekam means one and adityam means without a second. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or generally as we say God with a capital G, is that ekam eva adityam paramo purusha. Ekam eva adityam, one and without a second. Paramo purusha means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purusha means person, and param means supreme. So that is the definition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or as we generally say God, with a capital G. In English you will notice that God is, I don't know, but in German also I think, sometimes God is written with a capital G and sometimes with a small g. Do you do that in German? Yeah? Anyway. But in English, that happens. God, generally God is written with capital G, but the atheistic people nowadays, the so-called intellectuals, they are writing God with a small g. And anyway, that is because they actually do not understand who God is. But God is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and He is that one and without a second. And that's why Prabhupada, in order to dispel that misconception, in order to clear that misconception, Prabhupada used these two specific words. One is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the other is demigods. And there is a very specific difference between these two. Who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Lord God, with a capital G. Where the God that has been defined in different religions, that has been described as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there are different controllers of the material nature that we cannot perceive with our material vision, with our very gross material vision, but they are there. They are the different departmental heads of the material nature. Like there is a departmental head of water. There is a departmental head of fire. There's a different departmental head for rain. There's a departmental head for sun. There's a departmental head for the moon planet, and so on and so forth. Now these departmental heads, those who are also very, very powerful personalities. Like, can you imagine there is a person who controls the whole affairs of water in the creation? So he is a demigod. There is another person who controls all the affairs of fire. Now, why should it be difficult to understand, or why should it be impossible to believe? I mean, even in our worldly affairs, we see that there are different departments. In Germany, say in Heidelberg, there's a department of water supply. Yeah, there's a different department of electricity. There's a department of gardening, right? There's a different department of, what's this called? Construction or bow. That gives the permission or maintains the different construction affairs of the state or city. So we see that even in a state or in a city or even in a town, there are different departments like that. So why in the universal affair there would not be a different department or different departments?
taking care of these different affairs.
Now, the people, those who are situated in knowledge, they know that they are. The rains are not taking place just by accident or chance. Sun is not coming up by chance. The fire is not just happening by chance. These are all taken care of by different in charges of different departments of this universe. Now those personalities, those who are controlling these things, they are called the demigods. Now there are two principal demigods. They are, as it's been explained here, one is the demigod of creation and the other is the demigod of destruction. Like, who is the demigod of creation? Who is in charge of creation of this universe? Brahma. And who is the in charge of destruction? Lord Shiva. So, Lord Shiva, here Brahma is telling Narad, his son, that by his will I create. Brahma, who is the creator of this universe, is admitting that previously Brahma described that Narayane Bhagavati Tadidam Vishwamahitam Grihitam Ayoru Guna Sargad Avaguna Sataha. That Narayane Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, is the supreme maintainer, but the creation and destruction are done by me and Lord Shiva. Under his direction, Brahma or the different demigods cannot act whimsically. Can the water supply department in Heidelberg act whimsically? No. They work under the direction of, say, the Burgermeister, the mayor or the city authority. Like, the water supply department cannot think that now I have become the controller of the water supply, so let me flood the city of Heidelberg. If he does that, then immediately the police will come and arrest him and put him in a lunatic asylum, right? Because he must have gone mad. That's why he's behaving like that. So a sane man always works under the direction of the authority. So these demigods also work under the direction of the authorities. Like Brahma creates by the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna. That has, I'm sure everyone knows here, how Brahma creates. Does everybody know how Brahma creates? Who doesn't know? Raise your hand. I can see that the devotees are becoming very humble. Or maybe they're fond of listening to stories. So, Lord Brahma is the first created being. He, before the universe was created, well, let me go back also. The creation takes place by when the Lord glances towards the material nature, then through his glance, the outgoing living entities, that is the living entities, those who want to enjoy without Krishna, without the Lord, or in one word, the living entities, those who have lost their right to remain in the spiritual sky, like us,
We are the outgoing living entities. We didn't want to stay with the Lord. We can see our nature is like that. We don't want to accept the Lord. We don't want to enjoy with the Lord. We want to enjoy ourselves by lording over the material nature. So that's our disease. And due to that disease, we lose the right to remain in the spiritual sky. So these outgoing living entities, they come into the material nature by the glance of the Supreme Personality of God. The Lord glances, and these living entities, through His glance, the spiritual sparks, they come into the material nature, and according to their desire, they begin to, they try to enjoy this material nature. Now, that is the general concept, but it doesn't really happen just like that. It happens in stages. Like when the Lord looks at the glances of the material nature, then the outgoing living entities are actually stored by Lord Shiva. The Lord does not really get involved with the material creation. He simply glances. And these outgoing living entities, those who are held by the Lord's incarnation as Lord Shiva, Sadashiv, as you're asking me now. So Lord Shiva injects those living entities in the womb of the material nature. Through Lord Shiva, these living entities come into the material nature, to this universe. And before that also, something happened, that is, the Lord lies down in the causal ocean, and through His breathing, the bubbles that are caused by His breathing, each bubble takes the shape of a universe. Can you imagine if you are breathing underwater, what will happen? The breathing will produce the bubbles. And so each bubble that is created out of the Lord's breathing, and the Lord doesn't really breathe only through His mouth or nose. He also breathes through His pores of His body. Like we also breathe through the pores of our body. And each bubble becomes a universe. And then the Lord, then the Lord enters in each bubble or each universe. And He fills up half of the universe with the perspiration from His body, and then He lies down on that water. So this expansion of the Lord is known as what? Laghu? Very good. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And the one that was previous to that, when the Lord lies on the causal ocean, Mataji? Very good. Karanudakshaya Vishnu. And then, when He enters into the universe and fills up the universe with the perspiration from His body, and He lies down, and then from His navel comes out one lotus. And the first created being is actually situated on that lotus. Who is that? Huh? Lord Brahma. So, this is how the first created being comes into existence in this universe. And Lord Brahma, when He comes here, He wonders, where He came from. He couldn't figure out where He actually came from and what He was supposed to do here. Like Brahma, of course, is not like us, who was born as a baby and then grew up and then became mature. He just opens His eyes. He comes from the navel of the Lord, And then as he opens his eyes, he finds himself sitting on a lotus, and he is all alone in a strange place, right? And he wonders where he came from and what he was supposed to do there. And who he was, he couldn't, because you see, we all are spiritual entities, but as long as we are in the spiritual nature, we are situated in knowledge, because spiritual nature is full of knowledge. But this material nature is in ignorance. So as we come into the material nature, we are immediately fallen into ignorance. So Brahma, although he is a very, very elevated personality, although he appeared directly from the Lord's body, from the navel of the Lord, but still he was also bewildered. He didn't know who he was. So Brahma began to wonder who he was and where he came from and how come he all of a sudden landed in this strange place. So Brahma thought that if he climbed down the stem of the lotus, then he'll find out where he came from. So thinking that, Brahma began to climb down the stem of the lotus. And as he climbed down for many, many years, according to our calculation, for a long, long time he climbed, but still he couldn't come to the bottom. And he became very afraid. Then he climbed up again, sat on the lotus and began to wonder. I mean, I climbed down for such a long time and still I couldn't come to the bottom of this lotus. So what shall I do now? How shall I find out who am I? Where did I come from? And what am I supposed to do here? Why am I here? So in the meantime, the waves on the causal, on the Garbha ocean were splashing against each other, and a sound came out like tapaha, tapaha, tapaha. So from that sound, Brahma got the instruction in the heart that he must tapaha, he must meditate. So Brahma sat on a meditation. Instead of going out, Brahma went into himself. Meditation means withdrawing oneself into himself. Brahma realized that by external endeavor, he is not going to find out who he was, where he came from, and what he is supposed to do here. So when Brahma sat down in meditation, and he meditated for 1,000 years according to the calculation of the demigods. Such a long, long time he calculated, he meditated. And then the Lord appeared in his heart. The Lord appeared in his heart. Of course, the Lord is always sitting in his heart. Like the Lord is sitting in everybody's heart. Lord is sitting in everybody's heart. Lord is there in the heart of all of us. But since we are externally projecting ourselves, we are not seeing, we are not perceiving that the Lord is sitting there. And that's why we cannot take his instruction. So Brahma, when he meditated and went deep into himself, in the deepest core of his heart, then Brahma saw the Lord, and then the Lord gave him the Gayatri Mantra. And that's what is the first, that is the first shloka of, in the invocation of Srimad Bhagavatam. What is that? Tene Brahmarida Adi Kavaye Muihanti Jatsuraya. The Lord imparted this transcendental knowledge in the heart of Brahma. This transcendental knowledge was given by the Lord to the first created being, Brahma. And then Brahma began to chant the Gayatri Mantra or meditate on the Gayatri Mantra. And I'm sure many of you, those who are Brahmins, know the Gayatri Mantra. And Brahma kept on meditating on Gayatri Mantra. And then the Vedas revealed in Brahma's heart. Vedas mean what? Vedas mean knowledge. Vedas doesn't mean just some books from India. No. People think that Vedas are just some books from India. But Vedas are actually the transcendental knowledge that was created, that was revealed in the heart of Brahma, the first created being. And who is the creator of this universe? I'll come to that gradually. But this one, this makes it very clear that that this knowledge is not Indian, but this knowledge belongs to this universe. This knowledge belongs to everyone in this universe. Is Brahma an Indian? No. Brahma is the first created being in this universe, and then when Brahma received the absolute knowledge, the transcendental knowledge, then he realized. And what was the realization? What was the first answer? What was the question of his first answer? What was the answer to his first question? Who am I? And what was the answer? Tattva? Atma Tattva? What was the answer to that first question? Who am I? In an answer to who am I, as an answer to who am I, what did Brahma realize in his heart? Very good. Jiver Sharup Hoy Krishna Lipta Das. So the answer to the question, who am I, Brahma realized that he is the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then, what was the second question? Marandaka? Where did I come from? So where did Brahma come from? who will answer to that question? Where did Brahma come from? Did Brahma come out of matter? No. He came from the spiritual sky. Brahma realized that he is a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he came from the spiritual sky. He didn't come from this material nature. And then what is the third question? What am I doing? What am I supposed to do here? And what instruction Brahma got as an answer to that question? He was supposed to help the Lord to create this universe. So this way Brahma got the answer to these three questions known as Brahma Jigyasa. Tene Brahmavida Adi Kavaye Muihanti Jatsulaya. So Brahma received that knowledge that even bewilders the demigods. And then Brahma began to create. Should I go further? How Brahma began to create? Okay, at first Brahma created four sons out of his mind. Like Brahma is such a powerful person that he could produce children from his mind. What is actually birth? Birth means spirit souls getting a body, right? Now Brahma could do that. Brahma could invite a spirit soul and say, now you, please come and help me, right? And then four personalities came out of Brahma's mind. Brahma called and then they appeared. Who are they? Yeah, what are their names? Shanat Kumar, Shanak, Shanatan, Shanandan, and Shanat Kumar. Shanak, Shanatan, Shanandan, and Shanat Kumar. They appeared as four little boys, six-year-old boys. And very beautiful looking. Like children are always very beautiful because they're very innocent. But these people were not innocent. They were situated in absolute knowledge. So when Brahma requested them, so now so my son, you please help me with this creation. So these four boys folded their hands and said, "My Father, please forgive us, so that we don't want to get entangled in this hassle." said, "This, we know that this material nature is a hell of a terrible place, and we don't want to get entangled in this affairs of this material nature. Please forgive us." So Brahma got angry, because Brahma actually is situated in the mode of passion. Creation takes place in the mode of passion. So although Brahma is the most elevated personality in this universe, Brahma got angry that my children, my sons, they're supposed to help me, they're supposed to be obedient to me, but they are disobeying my instruction. But then immediately Brahma controlled his anger. He said, "No, I shouldn't get angry with my children." And when Brahma controlled the anger, then the anger came out from in between his eyebrows in the form of 11 Rudras. So, and then Brahma produced 10 more children from his mind. And they are the 9 Prajapatis, 9 progenitors of this universe, and the youngest one is Narad Muni. So Brahma produced these 10 children, and these 9, they were obedient to Brahma and said, "Yes, Father, whatever you tell us, we'll do. So we'll help you in your creation." But Narad, the youngest one, he was like his 4 other brothers. He was kind of aloof, he was reluctant to get involved in this material affairs. And Brahma did not mind. Generally, father is affectionate to the youngest child. So Brahma was very affectionate to Narad and felt, I have my 9 grown-up children. They're going to help me. So if the youngest one doesn't help, it doesn't really matter. Let him be. Let him play around. So then Narad Muni, one day, Narad Muni saw Brahma. Narad saw Brahma. He was sitting in meditation, and his tears were streaming down his eyes, and his body was shivering in ecstasy, and the hairs were standing on its end, on the ends. And Narad could see that in his ecstasy, in his meditation, Brahma was experiencing a transcendental ecstasy. So Narad wondered, how come my father is experiencing that ecstasy? Upon whom my father is meditating like this? So Narad, when Brahma came to his outer senses, so Narad asked, "My father, all this while I thought that you are the supreme. You are the highest personality. You are the supreme personality. But now I saw that you are meditating upon someone, and meditating upon him, you are experiencing a divine ecstasy. Now who is that person?" And then Brahma began to give the knowledge to Narad. And this is this chapter. Brahma told Narad about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Narayan, who is the origin of both the material creation and the spiritual nature. So this is how Brahma revealed this knowledge to Narad. And this is how the parampara is flowing. Like, with the knowledge that we have got, how did you get this knowledge? We got it in the parampara. And how does our parampara go? Do you know? Who is the first one in the parampara? Krishna. Then Krishna gave the knowledge to Brahma. Then Brahma gave the knowledge to Narad. Then Narad gave the knowledge to Vasudev. Then Vasudev gave the knowledge to Madhvacharya. And this is how it comes down. Then in the line of Madhvacharya, there are different gurus, then this different acharyas in the parampara. Then the knowledge came to Madhavendra Puri. Then Madhavendra Puri gave the knowledge to Ishwar Puri. Then Ishwar Puri gave the knowledge to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, came as a devotee. And Mahaprabhu actually modified this knowledge, revealed it even further. And then it's coming in the line of our parampara. So this way, we can see that this is the highest knowledge, and apparently it may sound like a fairy tale, like I was seeing that everyone was absolutely absorbed in the story of Brahma Narad Sangbad. The discourse between the story of Brahma and Narad, the way a child becomes absorbed in a fairy tale, right? And it sounds like a fairy tale, but actually this is the highest knowledge. The fairy tale is a complete imagination, but this knowledge is the absolute truth. Brahma is not an imagination, Krishna is not an imagination, they are absolute truth, but they are beyond our sense perception. We cannot see them. At least Krishna we cannot see with our material senses. He is adhokshaja. So that's why it seems, it's like a fairy tale. People think like that. The wise fools of today think that these are all fairy tales. And even in India, people say the mythology. They say, these are all mythology. But actually, this is due to the effect of modern civilization, materialistic civilization, that this transcendental knowledge has been branded as mythology. Myth, just some kind of imaginary concept. But little do they realize that this is actually absolute truth. Now, regarding that, an example has been given that how it appears to be like a fairy tale, but it's actually absolute truth. It said that the opposites are diametrically, the opposites are alike. Like the sun rise and sun set. They're diametrically opposite, right? When the sun is rising, the sun is actually coming up. And sun is setting, the sun is going down. But these two points, the time of sunrise and time of sunset, appears to be alike, right? If you wake up at, say, 6 o'clock in the evening and you look up, you say, now the sun is rising, right? So, it looks alike. The opposites are alike, right? So, that's why the fairy tales and this Vedic knowledge appears to be alike, because they are diametrically opposite, or they are diametrically opposite, whereas fairy tales are just some kind of imaginary concepts, just imaginary stories, like straight out of Hans Christian Andersen. Hans Andersen, and I think in Germany it's Grimm's, yeah? Grimm's brothers, right? Gebruder Grimm's, yeah? And in India also there are many, in English also there's Aesop, Aesop's fables. But these are not such imagination like that. Like, there's a big difference between Vasudev and Hans Andersen. Right? Like, Vasudev is a sage, is a self-realized person who is sitting high up in the mountains, in the Himalayas. Now, a person who is sitting up in Himalayas, who is free from all material needs, he doesn't need food to eat, he barely needs air to breathe, right? He is living in, minus 60 degree, but all he is wearing is just that little coping. That's about all he is wearing. Now, why a person like that, who doesn't have any material need, write some, what's the expression? I mean, the one I can remember is a very crude one. I don't want to use it here. Fiction or fairy tales. A person who doesn't have any material attachment or any material concern, why should he write a fairy tale? Like, we notice ourselves. Like, I'm sure many of you have been used to write before you joined the movement, and used to write all kinds of fantastic stuff. Yeah. Right. But ever since you become a devotee, you stopped writing those things. Right? Like, before I joined the movement, that was one of my passions, to write. And I know, I was just writing all kinds of garbage, all kinds of nonsense. But ever since I became a devotee, I stopped writing, because I realized that, what's the point in cheating people? What's the point in just giving them some BS? That's the expression I wanted to use. So, it's pointless giving them some... Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's some kind of, imaginary stories. Tribhang was asking, what was that word? So we can see that we, those who are just trying to be devotees, we give up writing all kinds of nonsense. So what to talk about Vasudev, who is such an elevated person? Why should he write some nonsense stories? First of all, Vasudev doesn't have any children around him, right, to give a fairy tale. Right? He's sitting there all by himself. Right? And then besides that, Vasudev doesn't have some material need, so he is wondering, so here, let me publish this book and I'll get some money, or I'll become famous. Vasudev doesn't care about all these material needs. Like, even today, there are people, those who are sitting high up in the mountains in Himalayas. Now, if you go and tell them that, will you please come and I'll make you famous. I'll make you a millionaire. Do you think he'll come? He won't come. Because he'll say, well, what's the use of these papers that you want to offer me? So that I already got out of this. It was a hell of a hassle to get out of it. And now that I have got out of it, now you are trying to get me back into that rut, back into that miserable existence once again. Forget it. You get out of here. Right? That would be his attitude. I mean, even today, those sages, those who are sitting up in Himalaya. Like, I remember, we don't have to go that far. We were in Rishikesh. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and few of us, right after Mayapur festival last year, we went to Rishikesh. We actually go there every year, because when Prabhupada was there in Rishikesh, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I were serving him. So every year after Mayapur festival, we go to that place and we live in that house where Prabhupada was living. Rocky, and then as you come, go across the big, big boulders. And then you jump over the boulders, and then you come to this beach on the Ganges, by the Ganges. And there's no one there. only there is one sadhu. Last year we found him. The year before last he was not there. Last year we found him. He was there. And we used to call him the Beach Baba. And he never used to speak to anyone. He used to just sit there, meditate and do his yoga. And he's an Indian sadhu. And but seems to be quite blissful. So the day we were leaving, we used to have our mats and blankets and to lie down on the beach. We are the jet set sadhus. So we offered those things to him, to that man. We thought that really he will need them. And his response was, oh, forget it, we don't need this. He doesn't need the mats, he doesn't need the blankets, he doesn't need the foam mattress. He doesn't need any of these things. He said, no. I'm fine. I was speaking to him. So he said, I'm fine, I don't need all these things. So, I mean, a person like that, I mean, we can see that he's so detached from material attachment. So what to talk about the people, those who are living high up in the mountain. Actually, they don't even get any food to eat. When you go high up in the mountains, the Himalayas, which is all covered with snow and they live in the caves, there is no human habitation in hundreds of miles. If not hundreds of miles, at least in scores of miles. So this is the way we can understand that the knowledge that is there in these books are not just some imagination. It is all dealing with the absolute truth, because consider the person it is coming from. Like, at least we have seen Prabhupada. Although Prabhupada had everything, Prabhupada was absolutely detached. And Prabhupada wrote this book. So why should Prabhupada give us some kind of fairy tale? Did Prabhupada give us some fairy tales just to sing us, just to make us go to sleep? Or did Prabhupada want to print these books to make some money? No. Prabhupada just wanted to distribute this knowledge to everyone in the world. And that's why Prabhupada stayed up the whole night and wrote this book. Prabhupada used to sleep only for 2 hours. And he used to get up, he used to go to sleep at 9 o'clock, and he would wake up by 11 o'clock. And then Prabhupada would start translating. He would translate till 5:30, 6 o'clock. And then he would go for a morning walk. So that was Prabhupada's schedule. Now we can see, here is a person who actually have transcended all the material needs. He doesn't even need to eat. He didn't even need to sleep. And he traveled around all over the world. Like I was saying myself, I just took a flight from New York to Germany the other day, and still I'm suffering from the jet lag. My whole body is a disaster. And I was thinking that Prabhupada, he was traveling around the world at the age of 75. So Prabhupada, say 73, when Prabhupada was 73 to 70, say 81, for these 8 years, Prabhupada just traveled around the world like a whirlwind, preaching, writing, meeting people, opening temples, inspiring devotees. And Prabhupada didn't feel any fatigue. And I realize when I see myself how Prabhupada, difficult it must have been for Prabhupada. But that makes us realize that Prabhupada was transcendental to all these physical impediments. So did he do that? I mean, was he, from that point, was he writing some kind of fairy tales? And as we, of course, read these books and become situated in this knowledge, then this knowledge also reveals in our heart. Otherwise, why should we be here in ISKCON? Like I came to try it out for 2 months. I thought that I'll try it out for 2 months, and if it doesn't really, if I don't really find anything valuable or anything effective, then I'll just, by this 2 months my hair will grow and I'll go back. And that 2 months never really ended. And each day it is that my conviction is becoming stronger and stronger. Okay, Hare Krishna, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Tell you a pastime of Krishna. Okay. There's so many, I'm thinking which one I should tell. Should I tell this pastime? You know this pastime? Go lifting over, lifting of Govardhan. You can tell. Krishna was only a 6-year-old boy at that time, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, under the direction of Nanda Maharaj, were arranging for Indra Puja. Every year on such and such day, they were used to worship Indra, because Indra is the controller of rain, and they are actually farmers. They are Vaishya, right? Like they used to tend cows, and in order to tend cows, you have to have nice grass and vegetation. And vegetation will grow out of rain. So they used to worship Indra. So they made elaborate arrangements, and they were about to make the puja of Indra. So Krishna came and told Nanda Maharaj, "Father, what are all these arrangements for?" So Krishna was just a little boy. And Nanda Maharaj said, "Oh, we are actually making arrangements for Indra puja." Then he asked, "What is Indra Puja?" Said, "Well, you see, Indra is the demigod. Indra is the controller of rain, and we need rain. So that's why, to satisfy Indra, we are worshipping. Jaggathat karmano annatra. This is jagga, sacrifice. Offering to a demigod is sacrifice, or jagga. So then Indra said, Krishna gave a logic, different reason, said, "Well, Father, no one actually worships Indra to have rain on the ocean. But still, the rain falls on the ocean. So, it is not that by Indra's mercy that you are getting the rain. Krishna wanted to tell, actually it's because of my mercy that you get the rain. I actually tell Indra, and out of my fear, Indra showers the rain." But Krishna doesn't like to brag. So he was quiet. He said that, "Instead of that, let us worship Govardhan. Instead of worshiping Indra, let's worship Govardhan. Because actually the Govardhan supplies us with all the sweet water, all the nice soft grass for the cows, and the Govardhan's field is full of, so beautiful, and the cows like to tend there. So let us actually take all this and offer it to Govardhan." Right? So Nanda Maharaj, he thought, although my son is so young, but he is really wise. And Nanda Maharaj could not really refute in Krishna's argument. So Nanda Maharaj conveyed the message to the others, and all the senior members of the community, they agreed. They said, yes, that's true. Why should you unnecessarily offer it to India? And he is showering rains everywhere. Right? So let's go and offer it to Govardhan, since Krishna is telling us. And we simply love Krishna. So whatever Krishna tells us, we do it. So they went and made a huge Govardhan puja. But then in the meantime, Indra got angry. Indra said, look, this little boy is so puffed up that he is defying my supremacy. Doesn't know that I am the king of the demigods. So here we have to understand, this is actually a trick of Jogamaya. Jogamaya actually bewilders everyone in order to enhance Krishna's pastime. Like, if you know that this little boy Krishna is actually the supreme personality of Godhead, then immediately you will become like this, right? So the pastimes will be spoiled, right? So they don't, this Jogamaya makes arrangement that everyone forgets that Krishna is God, right? And so Indra also, by the arrangements of Jogamaya, forgot that this little boy actually is the supreme personality of Godhead, his eternal master. So Indra got very angry, and he actually got very angry with the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So these people are such fools that they just listened to a little boy and defied my supremacy. So he felt that I'm going to teach them a very good lesson that they'll learn forever. So he called the clouds of disaster Sambhartha. The Sambhartha cloud is actually the cloud of disaster. At the time of disaster, this cloud goes and showers torrents of rain, and the whole world is inundated with water. So Indra called them and told them, now go and flood Vrindavan. And they came like a storm, rain. So all the inhabitants of Vrindavan became very afraid. They didn't know where to go and what to do. So they just told Krishna, Krishna, please save us. Krishna, please save us. What are you going to do now? This tremendous rain, the whole place is going to get flooded. And Krishna said, don't worry. So he just lifted Govardhan Hill on the little finger of his left hand. And he just held it like an umbrella. And then the rain, Indra showered the rains for 7 days, and he saw nothing actually happened. They're safe under the hill of, under the Govardhan Hill. All the cows and inhabitants were kept under the thing, and the rains didn't fall on them. Like a big umbrella, Krishna held it. And then Indra realized that this is not an act of an ordinary little boy. An ordinary little boy cannot hold a Giri Govardhan like this for 7 days on his little finger. So then Indra realized that this is his master, the supreme personality of Godhead Narayan. So he came and begged forgiveness. So now there is one touch to it. There is a further extension of this story or this pastime. One day, Madhu Mangal is the son of Sandipani Muni, and he is funny. He's a Brahmin, and he's a little funny. So Madhu Mangal and Krishna, Madhu Mangal was telling Krishna that, you are actually a Vaishya, but I am a Brahmin, so I am superior to you. So Krishna said, that's fine, but I mean, can you prove your superiority? I have proved my superiority. I have done things like, I killed Putana when I was just a few days old. Right? I killed Trinavarta when I was 1 month old. And so Krishna started telling all these things. And then I lifted Govardhan. So Madhu Mangal said, oh, actually, I did everything with my mantra. But it seemed... So, and he said, well, you're talking about Govardhan. Actually, when you lifted Govardhan, I was holding Govardhan with a stick. That's why Govardhan stayed up. And you are such an arrogant person, you are thinking that you did everything. Any other question? It comes like, then at one point, you got the question? So, you see, Brahma first creates with his mind, then the Prajapatis, they created the demigods and asuras, right, from Kashyapa, Diti and Aditi, right? And then, then Brahma, from the right-hand side of his body, created Manu. And from the left-hand side, created Satarupa from his body. And they were the first couple. Right? And from them, the human beings came. Right? But Satarupa was ashamed. She felt that we came from the same father. We came from the same body. But still this man is desiring to copulate with me. So she wanted to run away. So she took a form of a cow. Different form she took, and then Manu took the other form, the male form. So this way different male and female forms came, and that's how different species came. Yes. Yeah. Brahma was meditating, that is, he was withdrawing his consciousness and going deeper. You see, Brahma is a very elevated person. His mind was not completely spaced out. So his mind was not running here and there. So Brahma, when he decided to meditate, he just withdrew his senses from outside. And of course, at that time, there was nothing much outside. So it was not very difficult for him. So he projected his mind projected his consciousness inwardly. And then he could reach at the depth of his heart. Yeah. Actually, what came from the Gayatri Mantra, through the Gayatri Mantra, Brahma could see the spiritual sky. And then he could see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Right? So, that is how Brahma, got the Gayatri, the Vedas. Vedas means knowledge about Krishna and the spiritual sky. So that knowledge came. But then, when Brahma imparted the knowledge to his different sons, the first he gave it to his eldest son, Atharva, then Shyam, Rik, Jaju. So this is how Brahma divided the Vedas, Vedic knowledge, in four different branches. Right? So they became the four Vedas, four branches of the Vedas. And this is then the sages, they became masters of different parts of Vedas. So actually, you see, the knowledge was there, and the manifestation of the knowledge through words came through different sons of Brahma, right? Then the Vedas, then the Upanishads, then the Puran, So this is how the Vedic knowledge became expanded. Is that clear? It is she. Yeah. Come again. This I couldn't get the question. Body. The glance. It's the Mahavishnu and Karunadakshay Vishnu is the same, right? And when he glances through Maya, his glance actually agitates Maya, the material nature. Right? And then that through that agitation, the living entities become active. But at the same time, the universes are produced out of his respiration. Then of course that creation theory goes like Garbhodakshay Vishnu and Shirodakshay Vishnu. So we have to understand that this is how the link is. Like Maya like he is glancing at Maya, that is, he is glancing away from his spiritual nature, right? He is looking at the material nature. And through that, the living entities are injected into the womb of the material nature. But this material nature is actually part of the spiritual sky, right? And this is a part of the spiritual sky which is covered by the layers, the universal layers, where the knowledge cannot come in. That's why these places are in eternal darkness. We have to link it like that. After all, it is Mahavishnu who is lying on the causal ocean, and it's him who is glancing at Maya, and also it is from his body that the universes are coming out. It is not that Mahavishnu is somewhere else, then he glances at Maya, then he lies down into the causal ocean. It's the same personality. But actually, for our understanding, it has been presented in two different ways. Like one way is the creation through the causal, the bubbles in the causal ocean, right? And the other aspect is the living entities being injected into the womb of mind. Yeah, first of all, we have to begin with the understanding that it's inconceivable. With our limited brain, we cannot. But it was a nice question, but I don't know whether I have been able to answer the question properly. Ultimately, we have to leave it to that, you see. Like, it's Mahavishnu's body that is causing the universes. The bubble from his body is causing the universes in the causal ocean. And it's he who is glancing at mind. Actually, Maya is not very far from Vishnu. Right? Maya is just just close to Vishnu. But it is we, our due to our consciousness, sometimes we are in Maya and sometimes we are in spirituality. But for us, the distance between Maya to the spiritual nature is a long way. Yes. I don't remember the shlokas completely, but it's Brahma who gave the knowledge to Dasa. I'm sorry, Narada who gave the knowledge to. This is called Chotushloki Bhagavata. You see, in the beginning, the knowledge, Brahma is so elevated personality that he could understand things just by symbolic expression. Like for instance, if you go to a scientist and just, you can write something in symbolic way like E is equal to mc squared, right? Now the scientist will immediately understand what it means, right? But if you show that to a layman, E is equal to mc squared, what he will understand? Will he understand anything? No. To a scientist, this E is equal to mc squared, the theory of relativity will reveal the whole theory of relativity, right? Or to make it simple, like when you are a student of chemistry, you write say H2SO4 or say H2O. Now apparently it's H2O, right? But he will understand that you mean water. You don't have to write water, right? But if you show this symbol to a little boy who is in junior high school, he will not understand what this H2O means. For him, you have to explain water. Now, if the person has even less knowledge, then you have to explain even further. Really, you have to bring a bucket of water and show this. This is water, right? So you see, less in knowledgeable we are, the lesser knowledge we have, the more elaborate explanations we need, right? Now Brahma was so elevated that Brahma could understand just by symbol, right? So to Brahma it was just Krishna not only gave the symbols, Brahma could see the thing, the spiritual nature himself. And that's how, he could understand everything. There was no need for words or books or so and so forth. Right? And then Brahma gave the sum total of this knowledge to Narada, to Krishna consciousness. Who Krishna is, what the spiritual nature is, what the living entities are, and what's the relation between living entities and Krishna. Right? So, these four aspects were given to Krishna, Brahma gave to Narada. Right? That is Aham Eva Sham Eva Gre. The first shloka begins with that. Before anything was manifest, I was there. Krishna was there before anything was created. And then this Supreme Personality is situated in the spiritual nature with his omnipotency, with his multifarious energy. And that Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Enjoyer. And when the living entities become connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he also enjoys with the Lord. So these are the essence of the ultimate teachings of Vedanta Sutra, that is Bhagavata. And that was given to Narada. I'm sorry, that Narada gave that to Vasudeva in a form called Chotushloki Bhagavata. Bhagavatam in four shlokas.
I see, that reminds me, I have to memorize that shloka. It's important that we all memorize this shloka. Is that clear? Any other question? Let this be the last question. Yeah. What's that? Kilometer?
Oh. Vasudev expanded. Vasudev actually expanded that concept, these four shlokas. He gave this to Sukadev Goswami. Right? And then Sukadev Goswami spoke it to Parikshit Maharaj. Right? And then Parikshit Maharaj, then Suta Goswami was present in that assembly. Right? And then he told that Bhagavatam. He further elaborated that and gave it to the sages of Naimisharana. So this is how Bhagavatam expanded, right? More detailed explanation, like that. Yeah. Much more verses in the sense, you see, like they know it more elaborately. Like, for instance, you can take the 10th canto, right? The 10th canto actually has 84 chapters, right? And when Prabhupada was translating 10th canto, his plan was to translate Srimad Bhagavatam in 60 volumes. 30 volumes will be the remaining 11 cantos, and 30 volumes will be just 10 cantos, right? Now, the thing is that, but still, you know, we can say 10th canto is so vast, right? But if you read 10th canto, you can see the 10th canto is given just in small details, just touching Krishna's pastimes, not going into the details of Krishna's pastimes. Now, when one is situated in knowledge, higher knowledge, he knows the elaborate aspects of Krishna's pastimes, right? So that's how Bhagavatam becomes, you know, as the knowledge reveals in your heart, Bhagavatam becomes larger and larger, right? Like for instance, this pastime, consider one pastime, like when Trinavartha, Krishna killed Trinavartasur. I mean, in Bhagavatam it has been described that Krishna was playing with the gopis were actually playing with Krishna, baby Krishna. Then all of a sudden there was a huge storm, right? Trinavarta came. And then they couldn't find Krishna. Oh, the whole place became filled with dust. And then they couldn't find Krishna. They started looking for Krishna everywhere, calling him out. And they didn't know where Krishna went. And they were in extreme anxiety. They were crying. And because you can see, you know, like if you love a baby, and then all of a sudden if you see that the baby is gone, how will you feel? Right? Now there is not, I mean, elaborations are not given. They are just left to your imagination. Not your imagination, your inner perception. Right? So that is how Bhagavatam becomes. Like when the Goswamis gave, they expanded Srimad Bhagavatam, went into minor, more details of Krishna's pastimes. Like how the gopis were crying. Right? So, I mean, just with one pastime you can write a book. Right? I mean, each pastime of Krishna can become a play, become a drama. So that's how it is, you know, like in the heavenly planet. Actually, it's not Bhagavatam, it's Mahabharata which is like existing in the heavenly planet in the bigger form. Did you see Bhagavatam in the heavenly planet?
this is how you see, like, the more knowledge you have, the more deeper you go into Krishna's pastime, the deeper it is revealed in your heart. So the demigods are situated in a higher platform, right? So they know, their understanding, their perception of Krishna is higher than ours.